Welcome to Pure Hustle Podcast Live. Man, this is exciting. This is our normal Wednesday episode, and we're live. And by the way, I'm Mike.
And this is Orlando. And it's another live episode. It's an update episode. And we actually decided to start a little early, like 2-3 minutes, kind of throw everyone off a little bit. Just, I don't know. I just was like, hey, let's see how many people will jump on. And appreciate all of you that are getting here right now. Today, the winter seller update drops, so we'll talk about that. But this is going to be, like, are we doing like a regular podcast and then just ebb and flow if people have questions and we'll have a discussion, engage? What are your thoughts, Mike?
Yeah, so I think let's kind of, I know you're on a tight time limit today. So I think what we'll do is we'll just do our normal update episode. And as comments come in, we can interact with those. Make sure you stick around, though, especially if you're listening to this after the fact, because this is going to be uploaded as a podcast. Stick around because we're going to be talking about those reseller updates, the winter reseller updates that eBay put out. And there's some important things we want to talk about in that. But before we get started on that, yeah, what's going on with you, Orlando?
Well, I first want to say hi to everybody here in the chat early with us. What's going on, K-Way Shop? As always, one of the reasons we're doing this is because K-Way Shop definitely encourages us to go live more. So appreciate it, Wayne. Hustle Man, what's going on, Grandma? Junie, the Potty Mouth is back. Can't forget that name. Joy Goodnow, Jen's Tangle Threads, Anik Alexander, and there's a few more people coming in that haven't commented. Hey, everyone, give us a thumbs up if the audio is good, and we'll get moving forward here with the podcast. So there's a lot going on. It's, you know, I honestly thought by now I'd be done with this whole flooding thing, and I'm not trying to go over that over and over again every podcast, but it's still not done.
It's this is gonna become the Orlando's House Flooded podcast, like it was the Mike is selling his fifth wheel podcast, right?
That's right. And so I thank to everyone that gave the thumbs up on the audio. And so I'm at a place where right now I am so grateful I am organized. Again, I will say this. I'm so grateful I'm organized, which is rare for me. I'm not an organized kind of person. Everything in my life is always like all over the place. But my inventory, I have not lost a single item. And so that's been great. So I encourage everyone, organize your totes, organize your shelves, get those custom SKU labels, because it's allowed me to continue on in my business despite everything going on. And the problem is it keeps raining in San Diego, so they don't want to fix anything until the raining stops. And so I'm kind of in this very cluttered place. Like, my house is a hoarder house right now because I got totes in the living room. I got totes in my main hallway. I have my eBay room stacked. I have the podcast room stacked. My bedroom has multiple boxes. My kids' room has boxes. It's crazy. It's wild. So it is what it is, but, you know, we get through it. I got to say, sales have been all over the place lately. I know some of you in the comments here will say that too. You know, you get these days where you're like cranking, like it's like $1,000 a day, $500 a day, whatever it is. And you're like, maybe this is the way it's going to be. And it's like that for maybe 2 or 3 days and then plummet. I had my first zero sale day of 2023. And I've only had two of these in the last 6 years. And it was weird. Not only was it a zero sale day, it was a zero messages. I think I mentioned this in the last podcast, maybe. It was zero messages. It was zero offers. It was zero send offers. It was just like eBay. Like, if an EMP went off and eBay just died, that's what it felt like. Like, absolutely nothing happened. And so when you're reselling, what happens with those days is you're just hoping that the next few days you'll get big days to recover for that last day. Oh, did somebody say, did I say 2023?
All right, I'm sorry. You did say 2023. It's all right. We'll all forgive right,
well, you. I appreciate Jen for letting me know 2024. I feel like 2020 to 2024 is just one big year that never ends. Like, it's same old, except the sales have changed. And then along with that, let us know in the comments how you feel about some of this. So I feel like eBay has been glitching like a lot lately. The biggest one is the send offer thing right now. They said, hey, by the way, sorry, we're not going to make everybody do percentages. And the next thing you know, it showed up again on the app. And so it's forced now. There's a way to get around it. If on the top right of the app you hit cancel, it removes the forced percentages and it goes back to the normal format. The only problem is if you have one item that's a send offer, you can't even send the offer until you have to scroll again and you have to go to send offer. Some people have said they have to actually go to the desktop to send that one offer. So yeah, a lot of tricky things. And then on top of that, you know, sourcing has been interesting. I've been having to do a lot of local deals, a lot of thrifting just because of the rain. I can't do garage sales, which is fine. And, it just forces you to just get out there and do different things. But, you know, I've had a lot of good deals, bought some old audio equipment, like a vintage Sony Walkman and stuff like that for a great deal. So, you know, there's always opportunities to source. If you find yourself in a place where, like, I've been to my thrift, I can't find anything, go to garage sales. If you go to thrift and garage sales, like, I can't find anything, go to Facebook Marketplace, go to Craigslist, go to Nextdoor app, whatever. You can't find anything there. You can, you know, there's maybe auctions in your town. You can do auctions, or you can go to the bins. There's always ways to source. The question is, are you willing to get uncomfortable and try to find a new way to source? So that's been pretty much how things have been going for me. You know, it's been up and down. Like I said, last podcast, or I think it was the last minisode, I'm not giving up. I'm going to keep moving forward. I like the flexibility of my time. I like the ownership of my own time. And so it's really forced me to find new ways to source and to also continue on in sales.
Yeah, nice, man. It's not fun having a zero sale day. I have a lot of zero sale days, or definitely more than you do, but that's mostly just because my store is not as active. I don't have as many listings, but I tell you what, when I'm listing, I'm getting sales. When I'm not listing, I'm not getting sales. It's like as simple as that. I tell you what, though, the best part of what we do is the sourcing. We talk about that all the time. The listing is probably the most important part of what we do. The sourcing is the most enjoyable part. And so trying to balance that, but it is really frustrating when you go out and get skunked. I had a free weekend. I don't always have like free weekends to actually just really go out and hit every garage sale I can. But I tried this last weekend, and it's weird, like Texas weather, at least in Central Texas where I'm at, it's up and down. So like today it's hot. I'm actually kind of sweating out here in the garage. It was like high 70s today. But this weekend it was like cold. Like I woke up in the morning and it was like 30s, 40s. So I went out to garage sales and they just weren't there. Like I was driving around, the few that were there, it was like nothing. It was a big nothing burger, right? And that's frustrating. Mm-hmm. So then I went to thrift store and did okay at the thrift store. I feel like Goodwill still has its problems. It still has its issues. There's reasons why we called it the store that shall not be named. But I feel like we were very, very tainted with our view of Goodwill from being in San Diego. I don't think every Goodwill across the nation is the same. And maybe I'm just in a pretty unique place, but the Goodwill's here. The prices can still be really high on stuff, but I'm still finding things, like things that I would never find at the Goodwill in Goodwill's in San Diego. So it's kind of been a nice thing to see, just having that as an option for me. But man, just getting skunked going to garage sales. I went to an estate sale, and it really, really stinks when the estate sales, I feel like for whatever reason here, garage sales and estate sales, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Friday, Saturday is so common. So it's not bad because you get the 50% off when you go to estate sales on a Saturday a lot of times because it's the second or third day of the estate sale already. But you just know the good stuff is gone. And that's one of the things that it's hard because part of me thinks if I keep getting skunked like this, there's no way I would ever want to go full time because it's you go out, you get skunked, you don't really get enough stuff. Maybe you get like $100 net profit in a day of sourcing. That's not worth it, right? Like I can't go full time on like once a week going out in my big sourcing day is $100. Like it's just not going to work. But then I also remember, well, the only reason I'm only going out on Saturdays a lot of times is because I've got my 9-to-5 Thursday morning and Friday morning. I can't be at the garage sales that are running early. I can't be at the estate sales when they first open. So just kind of remembering, it's like I'm going to have to take one of these times and I'm off for like a whole week instead of going on a trip. I'm just going to do let me hit up the Thursday, Friday estate sales, the Thursday, Friday garage sales, and just see, because I think I'll have a better picture there of is it doable as opposed to just going Saturdays. Whereas I feel like San Diego, maybe again, it could just be the areas because I'm not driving to areas that are as populated. But I feel like just Saturdays, you could do pretty good at garage sales.
No, you could. And you know, the interesting thing is, it's good for you to get out there and kind of, you know, I've mentioned before when I was teaching full time how during those breaks I would take a whole week and go, this is what it would look like to be a full time seller. Right. And it was tough. And I encourage you, Mike, you know, over time, I think it'll get easier. But, you know, if you're not doing it full time, like it's hard to develop all the networks, all the resources. One of the things I'm going to bring in a lot of influencers into our discussion today. But Auction Professor just did a video about how if you want to scale, you shouldn't go to thrift stores. He never goes to garage sales. And so on. He talks about how he makes these huge local deals where he picks up hundreds of items at a time. And that's how he's been able to upscale his business. I think he has like 40,000 items. And I think everyone should go watch that video. I think it's a very good video. I think he very much shares that his experience in it. I think you can be full time. There's plenty we know. I mean, there's Wayne and his wife and others that go to thrift stores. So you got to look at what's available to you.
I just think you have to remember, though, you can be full time. But you really probably can't scale. It's like you're putting a limit on what you can do, right? If you're full time and your number one sourcing is garage sales and thrift stores, you're gonna probably max out. Now you may have like random finds where it's like, wow, I had this crazy find and I made $10,000 off it. Like what a bonus this year. Mm-hmm. But you're gonna kind of tap out on how much you can actually source because you're limited. Like how many garage sales can you physically get to on a Saturday? And if you went every Saturday, you know, mm-hmm. whereas you could scale if you're doing bigger bulk buys and bigger. So I think it's important to not conflate the two things and think that like scaling and full time are the same thing. Like you can be full time without scaling, but you're going to be limited, and you can scale.
Agreed. You know. I completely see your point. I really do. I totally see that. And I think at the same time, so I haven't scaled, but not for the reasons of being unable to get inventory or being able to get items. I haven't scaled just because I'd rather spend more time with my kids than spend more time in the business. And that's kind of like the choices you have to make. And so, you know, Auction Professor, it was great in his video because he talked about, you know, all the time I would spend garage selling and maybe I wouldn't get anything. You know, there's no way I could do this. And I agree with him. I mean, I go to garage sales because I enjoy it. I it's fun to me. But most of my inventory is throughout the week. It's either a local deal, it's an auction. There's somehow I buy an estate sale, I get connected. I've been doing this for long enough that I have so many business cards, I have people contacting me all the time that I, like I've said, I could source. If I had unlimited capital, I could source every day. Now, I'm being a lot wiser with my capital right now because, you know, things are interesting. There is no, I don't think there's a for sure way to guarantee you're going to get a certain amount of sales every day. I know some people say that, and maybe it's possible, but I have not personally experienced. Now, I want to bring in Big Dre here said, Josh Gott just quit the Power Hour podcast due to dropping down to a part-time seller and getting a job in his original field. How do you guys keep doing the podcast going after such a long time?
And, can I jump on this real quick?
All right, go ahead.
I mostly just want to jump in on this because you know, it kind of goes back to why we started the podcast in the first place. Orlando and I didn't start this as like, you know, this was going to be another job for us. You know, we get support for the podcast, which is really nice because it allows us to buy the equipment. It allows us to have the cameras. It allows us to pay for the server space, all the different things that we do. But one of the things that has kept us going is Orlando and I are just friends. Like we're friends that like to chat with each other. And the podcast is always just like a fun way of hanging out and getting to talk about things. And this is in some ways like how a lot of people in today's day interact, right? It's through podcasts. Like it's kind of a way of like, you know, instead of just getting together and hanging out at someone's house, like Orlando and I now no longer live together. So it's just, it's a way for us to stay.
Well, we've never lived together, but yeah, we know.
No, live in the same. Yeah. That's, we don't no longer live in, together in the same
roommate
even right now. Yeah. But you know, we no longer live like it that close to each other, but this gives us an opportunity just to chat and see how things are going. And this is a fun, it's a hobby for me with the reselling. It's a job for him. So we're talking about things that we care about, but we get to hang out. And I think that's the big thing is if you want to do this, if you want to like get into social media and get into those things, I think it's a rough road. If you're going to say like, I'm going to do this because I'm going to like make a living doing it. It's got to be something you love doing. So.
Yeah. And you know, I really appreciate Josh Galton. John is also on the podcast there with him, Flipping In Easy. And, you know, they bring a lot of content. I actually watch some of their shows and listen to some of their shows. And, you know, I know, and I just go out to Josh and say, hey, you guys don't have to necessarily quit it. I mean, yeah, one less competitor for us, but for me, they bring value to the community, and I appreciated that value. And just because you drop to a part-time seller from being a full-time seller doesn't mean that you're done as a reseller. It doesn't mean you can't provide value to people. So just want to encourage Josh there. He has years of experience, and I've learned a lot from him too in listening to him. So it is interesting. I guess we all have to make choices. And yeah, like Mike has said, our goal, you know, the whatever money we've made from the podcast, whether it be from affiliates, whether it be from YouTube, which is not much at all, whether it's from, you know, advertisers, whatever it's been, that was just an indirect effect that happened when Mike and I first started this podcast. Again, it was just to document. It was Mike saying, hey, I'm a new reseller. Why don't we just document our journey on a podcast? This was before anybody was really doing a podcast. Scavenger Life was the only thing around. And, you know, we just ended up landing in great opportunities. We got connected with Doug from eBay when Doug was at eBay, and we went to eBay Open and got to be speakers at eBay Open. And we just got kind of propelled into the reselling community just doing what we do. So I think that's I agree with Mike. Mike and I would talk anyways. So why don't we do it on the podcast? And Mike and I are so busy in our own personal lives now that it kind of forces us to talk. And still be friends via the podcast. So hopefully that answered your question. All right. Hey, before we jump forward, do want to talk a little bit about other great friends of ours. You know, it's been such a crazy year. I keep seeing all these ads. You know, people are freaking out about taxes. People are like, oh, I'm not getting the same return that we've gotten before. But I got to tell you, like, one of the things that has been so helpful has been our friendship with Faith and Paul from My Reseller Genie. When GoDaddy went down, which I don't know why they did, but I'm glad they did, because that's the beauty of capitalism, is that it sparks innovation, right? They decided not to. Faith and Paul, you know, stepped in, Paul and Faith stepped in, and they said, hey, we're going to provide a tool for resellers to use. And so My Reseller Genie has been very amazing. It's helped a lot of people throughout this entire time, you know, from that transition over to be able to do their taxes, to be able to be successful. And so if you haven't checked out My Reseller Genie, check them out. You don't have to deal with spreadsheets. You don't have to deal with trying to, you know, track everything. It'll do that tracking for you. Yeah, you have to enter your information, but it'll import everything from 2023 to 2024. And it'll allow you to do your taxes from even back to 2022 and 2021. So if you're worried about your taxes, check out My Reseller Genie. You can use our code below, Pure Hustle, and you'll get 15% off the first month. We're also still running a contest, which we were supposed to read names of the winners from January today, but things got crazy. And so we will next week. If I don't, I don't know if I'll offer a secondary prize if I don't do it, but we will announce names last week. This is all my fault, not Mike's fault. This is my fault for dropping the ball on this. I got a lot of personal stuff on the side that I wasn't able to take care of this one. But in February, we're also going to have a winner. So what these winners are going to do is they're going to get a free month of My Reseller Genie. So all you have to do is leave a comment on YouTube, and it's going to allow you to get My Reseller Genie for a month if you end up that winner. So if you haven't yet signed up for My Reseller Genie, go to the link below and use our code Pure Hustle, and you'll get 15% off the first month. Again, don't stress about your taxes. Use My Reseller Genie.
Yeah.
All right. I want to pull up a comment here from, let me see here. Let me see. Solar Fox Finance says, I've seen a lot of good deals on Facebook Marketplace and online classifieds, but I don't have enough capital to buy everything I see. I spread my money around over different seasonal items to lower risk. Any thoughts or advice? So my thought or advice is this. When you're doing local deals, if you can get it for really cheap, it's okay to experiment, right? It's okay if there's a bulk deal where, you know, you can get something you'll make $1,000 on, and you can buy it for $100 and $200, and you're not 100% familiar with it, then, you know, it's not a bad deal. Like, you know, if you'll make your money back, I always say within 25% of what you pick up, you should be able to make all your money back, and then everything else will be profit. If it's items that you are familiar with, like you really do know and you know how quick it'll sell, maybe you already have buyers lined up. Like, for example, I already have people that will buy Hot Wheels from me. They'll buy Hawaiian shirts from me. They'll buy all different things from me. If you already have those buyers lined up, then it doesn't hurt to maybe spend a little bit more. And maybe make a big purchase. You know, maybe you spend $500 and you're only going to make $500. Well, if you can make that in a week, I think it's worth it. I think that answered the question.
Well, I think this question is really asking, like, I don't have enough. There's so much opportunity. I don't have enough money to buy all the things that are available. Right. So that's it's the capital. That's the question. Not so much like, I don't know if I should take the risk, even though there's that seasonal risk part of that. I think the idea is just take your time, build your capital slowly. It's if you don't want to do it all overnight anyways, it's like anything. If you're trying to, you know, start any new program, whether it's like a weight loss program or whether it's a budget program, or like, you kind of have to ease into things in order for it to be maintainable. And so if you're at a place where you're like, my monthly capital that I can spend is like $200, I'm just starting out, right? $200 a month is about how much I can spend. Well, if you're making money, the next month it's going to be like $300. And then the next month you're going to have $500 a month available in capital every month. And then in a couple months, it might be closer to $1,000 that you have free capital. So you just got to build it. You got to build your capital over time. And so, yeah, you might not have enough. That's a great problem. Like, honestly, it's a good problem to say, like, there's so many things available. I don't even know what I should be buying. I don't have enough money to buy it all. You're never going to have enough money to buy everything, but that's a much better problem to have than I have capital, but I can't find anything to buy. So just keep building. You'll get there. It's just going to keep building. Give it time.
No, that's a good point too. I agree with it. All right, Mike. So you got any random stories?
I do. So I teased this a little bit on our last Monday episode.
Oh, that's
Anchor. Okay. So this is my, like, probably going to be one of my biggest regrets, or like, I'm never going to forget this story. So I'm at the Goodwill bins, and you know, I experienced a handful of the, like, they're bringing out new bins. I did a few hard good bin cycles where they rotate out some new stuff. And I'm looking through the things, and I'm on a Friday because I'm off school on Friday this last week. And I find some stuff. Like, I find enough stuff. I got like maybe a couple $100 of net profit in my basket. And as I'm kind of getting ready to leave, I'm walking out of the section of the store that's the hard good stuff and towards the register. I see walking from the back, one of the workers has this really big taxidermy bobcat, and she's walking with it in her arms, right? And I'm like, oh my gosh. And I see that she's walking towards the hard good section. So I'm like beelining it to cut her off. And I'm like, probably no more than like maybe 40 feet, 50 feet away. Like, I'm almost there to her. And she walks right by a lady at the register, and the lady at the register, who's checking out, and it's like a soccer mom. It's like, she's a soccer mom with like a kid in the cart, and she stops her and goes, I want to buy that. And the lady goes, well, I don't even know how much to sell it for. She goes, I don't care. I want to buy it. They sold it by the pound. So she picked it up. I asked the lady afterwards for under $8.
Wow.
I looked up this taxidermy and like this type of bobcat, like taxidermy, they go for over $1,000 on eBay all day. All day. And I as this lady cut her off, like probably 5 seconds later, you know, this lady says, oh, I want to buy that. And I, like, I'm telling you, I'm only like 20, 30 feet away, 50 feet away, maybe at most. Like, I'm not that far away from like being right there at this text room. Another guy yells across and he goes, I want to buy that. And the lady that's the soccer mom lady at the register goes, I'm already buying it. And I'm thinking, I should have yelled. My thought was, who knows? Like, nobody's going to know that this taxidermy is worth a lot. I just have to get it before it gets onto the floor. No, man, those people are vultures. The people at the bins, they know, like, they're there for a reason. They know what's up. And just to think, like, that thing goes for over $1,000. She picked it up for under $8. And I'm like, oh, like, that's my G.I. Joe moment. That was my, like, that's my taxidermy. Like, I saw it first. I know for a fact that, because I watched the lady walk it out from the back, and I'm thinking, ooh, I wonder if she's putting it over. That was mine, right? Like, I should have just yelled at that moment, like, I want to buy that. I didn't know that's what I needed to do. Oh, I'm never going to forget it. Like, and the lady was smart. As soon as she saw it, she's like, I'm going to pay for this and I'm going to come back. And she came back and did other shopping. But I'm like, oh, well,
Oh, so somebody, so Jessica here says, but did you follow her out and buy it? Which is what I've seen people do. That actually happened to me this last week at the thrift store.
No, she knew. She knew how much it was worth, or she wouldn't have bought it. She knew. And in fact, it was funny because the lady, I mean, it's funny now because I'm like, you know, whatever, the wound is healing. But
there's always another opportunity around the corner. Always.
But at the bins, like, what's the chance of finding a taxidermy bobcat at the bins? Like, what the heck, right? But anyways.
How terrible would that be in the bins? Like, people fighting in it and, like, they hit the bobcat too hard and, like, a paw falls off?
Breaking pieces off, yeah.
That's just terrible.
So anyways, the lady goes, I wasn't even going to bring it out because I thought it might be too scary. And she's like, are you sure you want to buy this? You have a little kid. It might be too scary. And the lady's like, no, I want it. It's fine. She's fine.
Okay. Just like, so your Goodwills are totally different than here. Like, that would not go down over here. Ours, I don't know what it is with ours over here, but they know. Like, they know. And actually, there's a new bins being opened out here in San Diego in downtown. And so I think I'm going to be there. I'm sure I'm going to see many of you that listen to the podcast there. It'll be interesting because I am not as I don't know. So years ago, I used to be down with chasing things and like rumbling with people. Like, I'm not down with that anymore because there's so much opportunity out there. There just isn't a need, and so it's just interesting. Real quick, I like Travis's comment here says. Loving the lives. I quit working out and focus on reselling. Now I'm fat and rich. Need to learn balance. And you know what? That's real. That is real. I can tell you for myself, like, especially when things are going really well, you're like, do I go to the gym or do I list some more? And
I go to the gym and list more.
Yeah. I'm going to let Mike say that because I shouldn't be giving any health advice, but I'm telling you, it will affect your sourcing eventually. I remember the last Q4 run I did for Amazon, it hit different than the year before because I had gained some weight and it was brutal. It was brutal. So, speaking of that, I had kind of the same scenario. Mine was just some old vintage. It wasn't vintage. It was like, some Fisher Price toys that I picked up for like $6 that I sold for 50. And this lady kept wanting to buy them from me. And, you know, even after I bought them at the store, she followed me out of the thrift store and she's like, how much would you sell them for? And I'm like, well, they go for 50 on eBay. I can do 30. And she's like, oh, my husband will kill me if I spend 30. And I'm like, well, I can't help you. Like, I gotta be at 30. So, you know, some people do that sometimes. I've even offered people money knowing that something is worth more, but it is what it is. Okay. So this kind of deals with my story. So there's this weird thing happening now that I do vintage toys or I do toys. I end up like contacting people on Facebook or on whatever platform it is. And then they call me and I pick up the phone and I swear I'm talking to like a 10-year-old kid. You know, I'm like, hey, and you know, they're like, yeah, I saw your offer. And I could tell, like, the parents are in the back. I'm sure I'm on Bluetooth or something. Like, you know, in the back. And they're like, so can we meet in the middle? And I'm like, what? And my older son is next to me in the car listening to this. He's dying laughing. He's like looking at me like, what is this? Like, why are you calling a kid? And I'm like, this is the number. They acted like, you know, like they, you know, they were like whoever the parent was. And so. It's been weird because lately I've had 3 deals, and the hard thing is, when if you ever want to see Orlando fold in a negotiation, have him have to negotiate with a kid, because I'm not gonna go lowest dollar on that kid. You know, it's kind of like when you go to this is why I don't go to those people that, like when people go on missions trips and they're like, oh, fundraiser for a missions trip. And it's like garage sale, you know, and it's like, I'm not going to haggle you. Like, I feel like I'm taking away from a good thing. So it was kind of weird. My last 2 or 3 buys have been like that. I had a Squishmallow buy. I had some vintage trains. I don't know, some other toy. And, you know, I do encourage parents that are negotiating. I think it's a good thing to encourage your kid. Like my youngest one, he's 12 and he knows how to negotiate. I've taught him how to. how to do awkward silence and not talk right away when people negotiate with him. It's just random. I don't have any solution to it. On the other end of it, you know, the worst is when I get encountered at the thrift store, like that lady, and she's like, "Are you a reseller?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm a reseller." She's like, "Yeah, I want to buy that for my daughter." And I'm like, "Are you implying that your cause is higher than my cause? Like, cause this is for your kids?" And what I always use to remind me of like why I shouldn't fool there is, well, the money I'm making directly impacts my kids. Right. So to me, it's a no brainer. Like, I'm not going to sell this for cheaper. Like, I also have kids, and, you know, you may be getting this for your kid, but I'm trying to make sure that my kid can go to college. I'm trying to make sure that my kid has gas in his car and so on. So anyways, that was my random story. I don't know if that added to our podcast at all. It's just awkward, dude. Like, it happened to me at garage sales. I had a kid with six baseball bats. He just finished Little League, and I knew the bats were worth like $500. And, you know, if it was anybody else, I would have paid like $60 for him. And he got me to agree to 120. And I'm like, so if you're running a garage sale, okay, and you're trying to make the most money,
use your kids. Is that what you're saying?
Use your kids to get the most out of resellers, because maybe there are resellers out there that have souls like I do. But I know some that don't. So you never know. You never know. So
you got to teach those kids a lesson.
Teach those kids a lesson. All right. Hey, and let us know if you have any questions, anything you want to share. Hey, this is what we're doing the live for. We want to engage with you guys. We want to talk with you guys. I love going live with you guys. But now we're going to get into what maybe a lot of people are waiting for is our reseller topics. Are we playing some music here, Mike, for our reseller topics?
No, I'm gonna not play the music, just because in the past when I've played music, it's kind of messed up the stream. So I'm not sure what's going to happen on this. So we'll just imagine that there's the breaking news music playing. I can even throw the banner up. Breaking news. This just in. There we go. We've got a few things we want to talk about. And one of those things that we want to go through is some of the big updates on the reseller update. And Orlando, you kind of made it sound like there's not a ton on there. It's not a big, exciting one. But I think there's a couple things on there that are like pretty big deal.
All right. Well, OK. So you stop me when you think something is a big deal. So the very first thing that Kai was they're talking about now that you can actually run sales on your active listings page. So if you haven't run a sale, usually you'd have to go to Seller Hub, right? You go to your Seller Hub on your desktop, and you'd have to go to marketing, and under marketing, you have to go to markdown sale. You have to create a sale. Now you can do it directly from your listings. Now, I don't know what this looks like. They say that it's already set up, but I haven't seen it yet. I don't see the option. Maybe I'm missing it. But what they're saying is that if you have an item that hasn't been moving, you have the ability now directly on that item to run a sale on it. And to me, that's great, because, you know, sometimes I have items and I'm like, hey, I really need to, you know, I need to move this, but I'm already running a big sale. I don't know if I could add it. So it'd be nice if I could like end the sale on one item and then I could run another sale. But I'm not seeing that on there yet. I'm guessing it's going to be like to sell it faster. They're saying they'll now give you recommendations as to, you know, if your item hasn't been moving, what you should list it at. And I go back and forth. It depends how good their AI is. If their AI is getting to the point where they can exactly tell you, like, they're how can I say it? So for example, they tell you when you list things, they're like, oh, here's a median price for this thing, but it's only a median price if you go with the most generic description. Right. So let's say it's Spooner Hawaiian shirt. So Rain Spooner Hawaiian shirt, let's say, is going for, I don't know, the median they say is $20. Okay. I'm just throwing a number. But if it's a Rain Spooner Hawaiian shirt, that's San Francisco Giants. So it's a Giants one, has, you know, all the Giants logos on the Hawaiian shirt. That will go for double the price of a regular Rain Spooner shirt. So if eBay is able to do that, then it'll definitely be worth it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but here's one of the things. So you're right. I think that's one aspect, is like, what are they going to determine this? Here's what I'm nervous and maybe cautious about with this, because there's the good part of like, hey, they're going to provide more tools for you to use in order to maybe do some extra markdowns and move items. But But listen to the way it's kind of worded. It's like recommendations. They're going to give you personal recommendations to help sell an item. To me, that sounds a lot like recommended item specifics. You know, like here are just things we recommend that you add this. You know, here's some recommended things you need to do for this item. And we know what it was like with those item specifics. It was basically not just like, hey, this is recommended. Yeah. This is kind of like, you will do this thing that we say you should do, or this item is not moving. Right. And that's kind of what I'm a little bit worried about that, that it's going to basically be like, here's your personalized, here's our suggestion for you to do for this item that's been stale or that needs to move. And by suggestion, we mean you will do it or it's not going to sell.
Yeah, no, I do think eBay is moving in that direction. I think the reason they're doing that is because they obviously want sales to happen, right? Because every sale that converts means more money from them. Every item that is taking space on their server, right, means less money for them. So I definitely see that. I don't think we're there yet, but I say this, gone are the days of like you list super high with best offer. I think those days are gone. I think you can still list like at the top, but I'm more of like you need to list in the middle and somewhere closer to, you know, the bottom end. And I know that sounds terrible, but I do think that's the direction that eBay is moving in. Now, they had another thing about drafts. I'm not too concerned about the drafts. So reduced unpaid, I thought was interesting. So they have
this is a win.
This is a win. This is a win. But the language is funny to me.
Specific. So we're talking about reducing unpaid items, and the way we're talking about reducing on items where we send offers.
Yep. Correct. So it says, well, you need to know this change to seller-initiated offers will help reduce unpaid item incidents by requiring buyers to pay for the item in order to accept your offer. If a buyer abandons the checkout page, the item will still be available for other potential buyers. And I think this is a win. I think this is great. And I think it's a win as long as they don't notify me that somebody has accepted the offer. I don't want to know that. No, because they did have that. Like 2 weeks ago, they had it where people were accepting offers, but they just didn't pay. And so you're like, what just happened? And then eBay on a community board released that, yeah, we're trying out this new thing that it's sent out and multiple people can accept it. And the first one that pays, you'll get paid. I'd rather just not have anything accepted until it's paid. It's just better that way, because then you're not, I always say this, if you're a busy person, if you have, you know, family, you have kids, whatever it is, you're planning out your day. And if I have an item that's going to take me 45 minutes to pack and somebody's accepted an offer and not paid, like I'm already in my mind mentally blocking out 30 to 45 minutes to pack that item. And so this is why I think is important. I'm looking at some of the comments. I'll get to some of them in a little bit. The other side of this is, though, I found the language interesting is they said at their FAQs, they said, we're actively testing solutions that require buyers to provide payment information before they submit bids to reduce unpaid items in auctions. So to me, I'm kind of like, what? Like, this is, it seems very simple. And maybe I don't know enough, but it should be pretty easy to be able to, like they said, we're going to require people to put payment and then we'll accept the offer. So I'm hoping this doesn't take long. We've been waiting over, what's it been, 18 months since the CEO said this was going to happen. And so, you know, hopefully, and this is 18 months since the CEO. We had people back in 2019 telling us this was going to happen. So it's been at least 4 years. So hopefully that will be the case. All right. What else did you find tricky in the seller update here?
Okay, so here's a big one. So the fee adjustment. So the pre-order fee for orders over $10 is increasing from 30 cents to 40 cents, and it's in order to help the marketplace, right? Like that's basically a fancy way of them saying, we're raising fees so that we can have more money because we need more money as eBay, which I understand that as a company. Like they might be like, we've got expenses, things are expensive, we have to raise fees. But it's kind of presented as like, in order to like help this whole system, we're going to be raising fees, but it's to help, you know, but that doesn't sound like a lot. Like you're talking 30 cents to 40 cents, but it's an increase, right? Like that's a significant increase. Why is it a win?
You might disagree with me here. So I was doing some of the math, right? And so let's say, you know, eBay, I don't know how much money, but let's say, let's throw, you know, they're trying to find ways to stay relevant. They're trying to find ways to be profitable. And the recent way they've done that is through promoted listings, right? Promoted listings has allowed eBay to continue making money every year. Even though they've been declining, they're still, you know, it hasn't been terrible. So it's 10 cents on every transaction, right? So let's say they have a billion transactions. I don't know what's 10 cents per transaction out of the billion transactions. I don't think they have a billion transactions.
10 million or something.
Yeah, something like that, okay? So to me, I'd rather lose that 10 cents than have to pay higher promoted rates on items or have them say, well, because remember they went from promoted listings, like 1% doesn't matter anymore. You have to do 2%. I would hate them to go, well, you have to do 3% now. Right, because that's a bigger chunk. I'd rather lose 10 cents on every item. Now, who this is going to affect, and they even said it themselves on their FAQs, is it's going to affect people that, you know, sell items that are worth less, right? So you need to factor in the type of items that you're selling, right? So if you're selling, you know, stuff for like $5 or $4, like that's going to affect you. But if I'm selling a $100 item, and I'm going to lose an extra 10 cents. I'd rather lose an extra 10 cents, right, than lose a 5% or 6% because of promoted listings.
I mean, but the promoted listings isn't going away. This isn't like, hey, we're doing this in lieu of promoted listings.
But I think you still have to deal with it. I just think it prevents everyone higher.
I doubt it. I mean, it's one of those things. It's like the prices go up, they're not coming back down, right? Like, so the prices on and the expectation for promoted listings has already gone up. And again, like you can't complain too much. Prices have gone up across the board. Of course, eBay is going to have to charge more, right? Like that's the way things work. But like, I'm not going to celebrate 10 cents extra a gallon, right? It's like, oh, it's only 10 cents. But yeah, like a 10 cents extra gallon of gas, like you see that happen, you're like, dang it. You know, it's never an exciting thing. And so, yeah, it's not a huge deal, but it's just one of those things where it's, basically like, here's our update, here's all the shiny things that we have, also things are going to get a little more expensive for you, but it's for the market. So yeah, I can't complain too much because
it's better than a percentage. It's better than a percentage. So like Travis,
maybe it's better than a percentage in the sense of, yeah, if you're selling something for $200, you still have to pay all the normal fees. It's just now it's 10 cents more on this fee.
Yeah, but if it's $100 and they raise the fee by 1%, that's $1 instead of 10 cents.
No, you sure. But like you said, the people, if you're selling things closer to the $20 mark, the normal like bread and butter, $20, $30, then it's hitting you more, which that's kind of a bummer.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with Travis here. Raising final value fees would have been worse. And I agree. Yep,
that's true.
I saw it as a win. I am kind of shocked. So he said, pretty sure there's a G.I. Joe vehicle called the Bobcat. Okay. Hey, you know, that's pretty much, I mean, maybe there's going to be YouTubers out there breaking down and catching things. I mean, there is the multi-user account access has been updated as far as now, like if you have a helper or an employee, whatever you want to call them, what they can do now is they can run sales for you. They can do promoted listings. I personally, I've never seen the need, but if you're a person that, you know, you have 100 employees, maybe you have two or three of them that look over that, that's one less thing you have to do. I think it's a win. But hey, definitely, if you have not had a helper or, you know, somebody to help you, MUA, the multi-user account access, is a great tool on eBay. It's really, when I had helpers, I had two helpers at one time, and it was awesome because they can list everything, they can draft everything, they can make everything go live, and they don't have to use your account access. So it's pretty good. It's pretty good. Hey, real quick, I wanted to share something here, something to celebrate. Julie here said, remember to celebrate your hustle. Just got back from a ski trip with my son this past weekend that was totally funded by eBay sales. Best part was $180 sale the night before to buy his skis. That's a win. It's not hustle of the week, you know, this week, but it is a hustle of the week. Like, I love eBay funded vacations. I love making money on eBay while I'm on vacation. So, all right. Anything you want to add more about the winter seller update?
No, I think that's pretty much it. There's other things, like you said, other people that it might matter a little bit more to. But yeah, I think let's take the big win of we're moving in the right direction of fewer unpaid items. That's a good thing.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, I'm just waiting for that shoe to drop where there's something we missed and everybody's going to be up in arms. You know, like, remember Promoted Listings? Years ago, Promoted Listings Gate.
All right. Hey, I mean, the other one is the Terapeak. I mean, three years of sold data.
It's been around for a while. It's interesting that they put in the update.
But there must be something to do with how you're able to do the searching or checking. And I don't know. I mean, it's just good to see they're doing some things good. Like, and it wasn't all just fee increases. So,
I mean, the beauty is, I mean, I've been in contact directly with the people that work at Terapeak, and there is a day coming where there will be integration in the app, as far as I was told. And I didn't sign any NDAs or anything, so I can say that. This is on the Winter Seller update, but I got this from this comes from Channel X. It's some news site. It says eBay authenticity guarantee process update. So eBay.com has shared an upcoming improvement that they're making to their authentication guarantee process for streetwear. The current streetwear authentication process includes two steps: authentication, listing accuracy. And so what they're going to do now is for sellers, you'll start getting notifications when a listing accuracy issue is found in Seller Hub and via email. For buyers, listing accuracy details will be sent to your email along with new notifications in your purchase history and view order detail pages, asking you to provide a response from a new inspection details page. So what that means is, right now, if you, or in the past, people, like, I, for example, I shipped out a pair of shoes. It failed authentication. Got back to me. I had no idea. They were legit. They were legit via other apps. I didn't know why. Well, now they will tell you on the app why. It'll say impacted, and they'll put pictures, and they'll say why this item was rejected, why it didn't make it. And the buyer will also be able to see this. And then I guess they get to respond and make a choice. Because it's better. Because I've had sometimes items that I've shipped out, and they get stuck in authentication. And buyers reach out to me and they're like, hey, I've been waiting for a week. I don't know what's going on. At least now, this is going to stop some of the friction that happens when you're reselling. So keep an eye out on that. All right. Did you catch this story? This story was pretty wild to me. The Poshmark fraud. Did you see that?
I did not see it.
It was pretty crazy. So let me read this to you. As many of you have seen this. This comes from this is the Washington Post. Bottega Veneta sunglasses, original price of $450.
Slow down. Okay. I can't tell what you're saying. Yeah.
All right. I'm just gonna start later on the story now. A Michigan woman allegedly pocketed more than $750,000 by selling stolen designer items worth $800,000. So federal prosecutors caught up with her. Brandalene Horn, 42, was arrested at her home in Freeland, Michigan, on charges of mail fraud, wire fraud, and interstate transportation of stolen property. Horn rented the luxury clothing from at least three subscription-based clothing rental companies. These companies allow consumers to rent a specific amount of clothing items on a monthly basis for a subscription fee. Instead of eventually returning the items, prosecutors say Horn created more than 170 accounts to sell the items. She engaged in the scheme for nearly 2 years, from April of 2022 to February of 2024. Often the photos and descriptions that Horn uploaded on her websites match those from the victim companies. A user, let me see, I'm trying to get down to the story. The rental companies attempted to charge Horn for the items she rented and didn't return, but she disputed these charges with her credit union or canceled the card she had provided to the rental companies, the Justice Department said.
Okay, here's what I feel like. That was a lot of money that she frauded. And obviously, I do not condone stealing and theft. I do not condone fraud. All of those things are terrible. In fact, especially when people fraud other people, like there's a certain amount of hatred I have, because I know a lot of people who've been scammed personally, and it's awful. But I just feel like, how can a person get away with that for 2 years? Like, part of it, and again, there's no excuse. You know, you should be able to trust people. But like, part of it is like on the policies and the procedures of those rental companies. Like, I feel there should be more in place, and maybe they're kind of thinking there's going to be some theft. There's going to be some, you know, like it's not the end of the world. But clearly she was able to game the system for a very long time, multiple companies. And you just, it just, it's a little bit shocking to me. Like, I feel like there'd be more procedures in place that would prevent something like that from happening. I wouldn't say like, oh, this place left their doors open, so they should be stolen from. That's wrong. I don't think that's correct. But at the same time, I feel like there is a little bit of responsibility on companies to provide some security and not allow that to happen. I guess it's just shocking to me that she could get away with that for so long. But hopefully that's like the test case that is needed in order to cause companies like that to buckle down. And because that kind of stuff hurts us as resellers. You've talked about that in the past. When people walk into a store and do the five-finger discount and then go put those things on eBay and they crash the prices, we can't compete with a bunch of thieves, you know? So I want those companies to be hard on that. But then at the same time, it sucks when I walk into my local Target and like the sunscreen and like stuff like that is locked up in cases and you got to push a button and wait for somebody to come open it. So it's like, it's a catch 22. It's like, I wish we lived in a more high trust society where like people were not doing bad things. Like you could just trust that people would do what is right. But at the same time, it hurts us as resellers either way. So I hope she gets what's coming to her. Cause I feel like a person who's scamming like that is also, you know, scamming other people. And it just,
So if that story annoyed you, this next story is going to annoy you. Okay. Now, have you ever been rejected a USPS insurance claim? I don't know how many you've had.
I haven't done many. No, I haven't been rejected.
So I've been rejected multiple times and everything was legit. My pictures were legit. The buyer themselves said it was broken. I refunded. I did everything and I got rejected. And I'm sure there's many in the chat or many that are listening that have had complete frustration with the post office because, you know, they did everything right. They shipped out the item. They packaged it well. It was broken. You know, the buyer even kept the packaging. They took pictures of packaging. They sent everything. And still, the post office rejected them. So let's get to our story here. So this comes from WFTV9. Said the lead title says, two brothers plead guilty to stealing over $2.3 million from USPS through mail scam. The U.S. Attorney's Office, Central District of California, said Anwar Farid Alam, 35, and Yusuf Vedeh Fahim Alam, 31, both pleaded guilty to count of mail fraud. Authorities said that the crimes occurred between October 2016 and May 2019. Officials said that Anwar and Yusuf, I'm destroying his name, Alam, bought packages and postage from the USPS, which included $100 in insurance for loss or damage packages, KTLA reported. Anwar reportedly wrapped the packages that had low value items or nothing at all inside. He then shipped them to fake addresses, officials said. Then Alam allegedly submitted the fraudulent insurance claims to USPS through its website and claimed that the packages were lost or damaged. Alam provided fake invoices and photos of the items that were not in the packages. Both of the brothers used fake names and fake businesses to hide the number of claims. According to KTLA, Anwar and Alam received checks for the alleged losses of around $100. Shipping costs were also added. The U.S. Attorney's Office said that the USPS lost at least $2.3 million. So I did some math. That means they filed at least 23,000 insurance claims. Yet I have been denied... Like, how does that happen?
Well, because they obviously knew the things they needed to say in order to get the claims to go through. That's a lot of money. So I can't say that they could make that if they just did a normal job for sure. But sometimes you look at the things criminals do and it's like, man, if you just put that, like the effort that you're putting into this, into frauding people into like a real legitimate job, you'd probably be doing okay. You know, like I feel like these people get caught.
If you have the smarts to do that, you can do far better in a legal job is what you're saying.
Yeah, like you're obviously a competent person. You've got some work ethic. Look, a lazy person, like there's lazy people, there's lazy criminals. To file 23,000 insurance claims, like that's some work. Like you're putting in, unless you just got bots that are doing it, but you've got to make fake identifications each time. You got to find fake addresses. That was probably like a near full-time job for a while, you know, like. And sure, like that's, you're not going to make $2.3 million or whatever that number was on a normal full-time job. So they sure did make more, but it just, it amazes me that so much fraud can take place. I won't say who it was, but I have a friend. If you've ever bought a house, when you buy a house, you go through your escrow company towards the end, and the whole time that you're in the process of escrow, every time you get an email from your escrow, there's like tons of stuff on the bottom of the email that's like, never wire money. Make sure to call your escrow company and speak to somebody first. If you wire, like, make sure you talk to, like, there's all these like warnings and frauds. And a close friend of mine, they had like a lot of stuff going on in their life. They're military, they're moving, they're doing all kinds of stuff. And they got frauded, like right towards the end, right before escrow closed, all this paperwork's coming in. They're trying to figure it all out. And they got the final value that she checked the numbers matched up. And so she sent the money, and it was basically like, too bad, so sad. There's nothing we can do. Wow. Once the money's wired, like there's like, it's not even like they can like say like, oh, we will research and try and figure out who frauded you. They basically throw their hands up in the air and the banks go, oh, sorry. Like, we can't trace it. We can't anything. And it just, it's wild to me, because if I want to go open a bank and I want money to come through, I feel like I typically have to have like an ID. I've got to like verify my address. I've got all these processes. And to think that there are people who make it their full-time job to do this kind of stuff, it's just, it's wild to me.
It reminds me of the story. Did you ever hear about the recycling scam that happened out of Riverside? So there are people, so in California, right, we have a huge, like, CRV, I think it's like 10 cents for every 2-liter bottle and whatever, like we have some of the highest like recycling fees. And the way you get back here, so whenever I buy soda, you know, because I like to buy my Diet Mountain Dew, if I buy 10 2-liters, that means I have a dollar that I can get back. So if I choose to, I don't do it, but if I choose to, I can take those bottles to a recycling center and I'll get a dollar back. Right. Where if you go to like Arizona, it may be like 5 cents for a 2-liter bottle. So what people were doing is they were taking recycling from Arizona and bringing it into California and cashing in California. And I didn't know that was against the law until I saw the news story.
Wait, so you're talking about like basically the Seinfeld episode?
I don't remember, but yeah, I guess so.
That was the Seinfeld episode where they were trying to transport cans from one state to another state in order to do that.
Yeah, and somebody did that. I think it was like $8 million, something like that.
Ooh, that's a lot of money. See, again, like I almost don't know if I feel like that's like a big enough deal. Like, 'cause like you said, how many people are not recycling in California? 'Cause really what it is it's a return. When you buy a can in California, you pay that CRV up front and you basically get that money back. So it's basically like that money's being held until you return the can. But the reality is, a lot of people don't recycle. Most cans, most things aren't getting returned anyways. So they just keep that money. And that's kind of the point, is it's like, you know, we want you to recycle, so we're going to hold this money until people recycle. Well, if the idea really is like, we want to help the environment, well, then if that stuff is being recycled, like, who cares? Like, let it be recycled. Let them get their money.
Yeah, it's fun. One of those things where I remember when I saw that story, I was like, was this a crime? Like, this is terrible. So anyways, I agree with Mike. Like, reselling is one of those things where the profit margins are so good and you don't have to worry about the law. Might as well resell. Like, might as well, you know, yeah. Okay. Do you have to put in a little bit of money? Sure you do, but sure beats, you know, the consequences of if, you know, trying to go the lazy route. And you're right. It does take work to go to the lazy route too. I mean, yeah,
it's
all not these lazy.
It's just the black market route, because it's yeah, you can't be successful like that, make that kind of money by being a lazy criminal, for sure.
There you go. So anyways, that's our reseller topics. Hopefully that brought some value to all of you, or at least it allowed you to, you know, laugh a little bit here and there. All right, what do we got for some bolos here?
Okay, I'm gonna do two things. One, I'm gonna try the sound effect and see if it messes up my audio. If it does, then you can just kind of carry until I get fixed. Okay. And then the other thing is, I don't have a bolo I want to share for this episode because it's live. I know you have one. I want to see if we get a couple added in the chat, and then I'll just shout out a couple of those. So you can do yours. I'm going to play the sound effect. And while you're doing yours, your bolo, we can have a couple of people just in the chat give us some items that you want to be on the lookout for when you're at garage sales, thrift stores, on Facebook Marketplace that are hot, profitable items.
All right, so I will start us here. And I don't know what's going on, but I think this is part of people just being done with screen time. I find that there's a lot of stuff coming out now. You know, you heard the term iPad kids. Have you heard that lately?
Oh, yeah.
Right? And you probably have them in your classroom. I don't know. But I think there's a push against the use of iPads now where, you know, it is convenient. I mean, when I raised my kids and they were small, I mean, it was nice, you know, to go somewhere and be like, oh, here's your iPad, you know, and they go and they play whatever game that's on there. And I always made it a rule, like in the car, I never wanted to do that. I'd rather have them bored and enjoy the scenery because I think there's something to be said about being able to be still without always having something, you know, stimulating your mind. And I find that lately, I don't know what's going on, but I am selling my Leapfrog, like not vintage, but like 2000s toy. So I'm selling, I have this one Leapfrog thing that's a BlackBerry, like it's a BlackBerry, but it's Leapfrog. I've been selling a few. I've been selling those. I've been selling the scribble and writes, you know, where kids can like write on the little thing and erase it and write again. I've been selling those. I've been selling. There's this thing called a DIDJ, which is a handheld Leapfrog item. I keep selling like these Leapfrog items. And when I go out and I'm sourcing and I'm looking up comps and I'm picking up different toys here and there, They're vintage toys, but they're selling for good money. They're selling for 2 to 3 times whatever they were retail. Maybe it's VTech, maybe it's Leapfrog, maybe it's a Play School thing. But I think there's two factors playing a role here. Number one, I think it's nostalgia. People are like, oh, I love that when I was had that as a kid. I want my kid to experience the same kind of fun that I had when I was a little kid. The other one is parents don't want to put their kids in front of iPads or any kind of electronic device. So they're more leaning towards these vintage toys. And when I say vintage, I mean, you know, 2000s, maybe 2010s. That makes sense?
Yeah, no, for sure. I was actually going to share. I was trying to see if I could throw in a picture file. I think I need to do it as like a slideshow or something. But there's an item that we bought our son called, and I don't know if you've seen these. You got older kids, so you probably don't. There's this new product called Tony Boxes. Have you heard of those?
No.
Okay. So a Tony box is, it's like a big square that's got a speaker on it, a couple of like ears that you could push buttons on. And they come with, imagine like Skylander type figures, but it's things like Mickey Mouse and an Alice in Wonderland and like like Spider-Man, different things. And each one you put on and it like magnets to the top of the box and it'll play music. It'll play like short stories. And what it is it's basically a way for your kid to listen to audiobooks, listen to music, but they're not in front of a screen. There's no screen. There's really not even a lot of buttons on it. Like they just hit the side of the box to fast forward or rewind. They push the ears to turn the volume up or down, right? And these things are they're pretty popular. It was a big hit item. I know this last year or two on Christmas. And it's that same concept. Now there's another one called Yodo. And I guess I will share a little bit of a bolo here. I don't think you're going to find any Yodos right now, but like Yodo Mini, which is another brand, kind of like the Tony box, but it's a little bit more geared towards slightly older kids. I'd say like closer to like 6 to 10 instead of like 2 to 5. And the Yodo Mini was on Amazon for only like $89. And it came with some cards that you, instead of figures, like little figures, it's cards that you slide in. And they've been sold out for months now. And the prices on them skyrocketed on eBay. And there is a big push of people, parents wanting their kids to have some kind of entertainment that's educational, but is not an iPad. They're like, there's a big movement to get away from screens. But at the same time, you know, it's easy to say, we'll just go outside and play. But, you know, like technology is still a thing. A lot of people don't want to say like, I don't want any, like, I'm not trying to get rid of all technology. But I do want to avoid the like access to YouTube and the access to, you know, the internet. So how do you do that? Well, you know, some of those older things, even the books, the old books that, you know, you could push buttons and it would read for you and things like that. I think there is a more of a push for that type of technology. So I certainly see things like the Leapsters, those kind of devices doing well.
Yeah, I think they may come back. I really do. Because, you know, and not to belabor the point, but, you know, with iPads, like there's a lot of things you can do to restrict things, right? You can put parental controls and all these different things, but it's a lot of like oversight, where with these other devices, you can just be a kid and you don't have to worry about it. There you go. Have fun. Right. And I think a lot of parents are moving in that direction. Now, I did not see, unless you're seeing bolos in the comments, I didn't see any bolos in the comments. And so I think everybody's like, I don't want to kill my market.
There we go. Look, I was able to do it. So this is just the picture of what those Yodo boxes look like. And you see how like there's these little figures that go on top. So if you happen to see these types of figures, this is still relatively new. But I think these figures, kind of like how Skylanders were a big deal, in the next few years, kids will start growing out of these. I think a lot of these are going to go local and not at garage sales to start with. But eventually you're going to start seeing these at garage sales. And I think it's something to keep an eye out in the future.
I've never seen one in my entire life.
Yeah, it's kind of a cool concept. If you got little kids, you know, look into it. It's cool. No screen, but still you have technology.
There you go. There you go. All right. So that is our... Oh, hey, we actually ended up with our two bolos, from one for you, one for me. Yeah. So, hey, before we move on, if you're looking out for items to sell, there's a lot of stuff on Whatnot that you can purchase. I know that, you know, Whatnot is one of those things where you can keep in the background. And, you know, while you're listing or whatever, you can see an item, go, wow, I could actually make money on that item. Or maybe it's an item you want. So if you haven't yet, you can get free $15 credit by going to our link below for Whatnot. And what it'll do is it'll give you $15 credit. Obviously, we'll also get a cup from Whatnot. It helps the podcast and it helps you out. And I do plan on doing a Whatnot. I had these big plans of doing Whatnots every Thursday. And then the flooding happened and that changed everything. But as soon as that is done, I'll have a lot more space and I'm going to start doing Whatnot auctions, just because, you know, if I start going to those bins nearby, and I also have a lot of inventory as I'm actually moving away from clothing. I'm going more to collectibles just because I'm enjoying that more. And one of the things I love about reselling is you can adapt and you can do what you enjoy. You know, we've had discussion multiple times, so I'm not going to be late do this discussion again. But I need to stay motivated. And right now, selling clothing, unless it's like some nice vintage pieces, like this beautiful, Trailblazers single stitch shirt that I picked up for free at a garage sale. Like I don't want to do clothing anymore. So check out our Whatnot link below to get that free 15. All right, we're coming to a close here. So Mike, what are you looking forward to?
Yeah, you know, I've got this week of school and next week of school, and then I get a whole week off. And I think I've got a lot of odds and end things I need to do, but the weather's warming up enough, unless we get another freak cold snap, that I'm going to try and hit those Thursday, Friday estate sales and garage sales, because I think that's where a lot of the money comes from, a lot of the potential is. So I'm looking forward to having the opportunity to pretend like I'm a full-time reseller with my schedule instead of just a part-time reseller. What about you?
So, I'm looking forward to going to garage sales again. I have gone, and I want to say it's been like 2 months. It's been a long time. At least I've gone to like a couple here and there, but I haven't had those, you know, the mornings where, you know, we can flex on Instagram and be like, oh, look at my trunk full. Like, I haven't had a moment like that in a long time. Long, long time. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm also looking forward to reorganizing my space. You know, one of the consequences of the flooding that happened is it allowed me to really push through my death piles, because, you know, I'm like, oh, I don't like this is organized. I'm going to list all this stuff now and I'm going to put it somewhere else. And so I am really looking forward to that. I also have some local deals I have lined up over the next couple of weeks, which I think will help. So I'm looking forward to making those deals. And so, yeah, you know, life goes on, reselling continues, happening. Again, I know people are in this roller coaster of sales on eBay or whatever platform they're on. But just remember, things do rebound. Sometimes they rebound temporarily and then it goes down and then it goes back up again. But just remember, there's always people making it happen. And, you know, it may take a little bit for all of us to figure out what it's going to take, but adaptation is key. And so thank you to all of you that jumped on the live. Thank you for all your comments. Thank you for all the funny stuff here that's on the comments. I really do enjoy our audience input. And all of you that are listening on the podcast, feel free to come on over, subscribe to our YouTube. You know, hit that bell notification so you're notified when we're live. And everyone, if you are watching this right now, if you can hit that like button, it'd be greatly appreciated. And with that being said, make sure to be real,
be relevant,
and be reselling leads. Peace.